station.
One year ago today, a small leak in a 40-year-old pipe at the Chevron refinery through a series of mistakes and mismanagement turned into a fire that sent nearly over 15,000 people to seek some kind of medical care in the surrounding community. Well, it's clear how regulatory officials are marking the anniversary. Yesterday they rolled out an agreement for Chevron, which is a multi-billion-dollar major oil company, to settle most of the major criminal charges against it by paying $2 million in fines and restitution. That's settling all claims from the California Attorney General's office and the Contra Costa District Attorney's office. Now, as various agencies have tried to figure out what happened that day, there's a very interesting culprit that's come up, and that is the type of oil that moves through the refinery. Chevron, like many refiners, has been taking on what they call more unconventional crude oil with a higher sulfur content, which makes it more corrosive, which means it can eat through things like pipes faster. Now, we don't know exactly what oil Chevron was moving the day it exploded, but we do know that refineries in the Bay Area are starting to take more of this type of crude, and they're getting some of it via rail shipment from Canada's tar sands. Joining us to talk about what that means for the health and safety of those of us who live in the area, we have Greg Karas. He's a senior scientist with Communities for a Better Environment. Welcome.
Good to be here, Brian.
Why don't you start off by describing the difference between regular crude oil and the bad stuff?
Okay. Well, so tar sands crude's a good elevator wrap. To get into it and understand it better, remember that petroleum, fossil fuels under the ground, range from solids, coal, all the way to what we call natural gas, and everything in between. So in the liquid range, there's stuff that's really like tar. A lot of that's called tar sands, some of it from Venezuela, from parts of the Saudi Peninsula, Russia, even parts of the U.S., they don't call tar sands, it's the same stuff. And then it goes all the way to maybe diesel, almost diesel fuel-like as it comes out of the ground. Pretty easy to understand that stuff that's more like tar and less like gasoline takes a lot more energy to turn into gasoline. So that's how you get the 2 to 3 times more combustion emissions, more fuel burn per barrel, 2 to 3 times more greenhouse gas emissions per barrel refined from an industry that's already the biggest industrial source of that. It's a big deal, huge deal by itself. On the other end of the spectrum, it's much more contaminated with toxic chemicals, things like mercury, lead, with corrosive chemicals. Sulfur in high temperature oil processing forms hydrogen sulfide gas, which is both acutely toxic and extremely corrosive at high temperatures. It corroded the pipe that blew and sent 15,000 to the hospital, nearly killing 19 workers a year ago at Chevron.
So how much of this high sulfur crude oil is moving through the Bay Area's refineries right now?
On the spectrum, we're refining very little real tar sands yet. Mm-hmm. The floodgates are about to open. We should come back to that.
Yeah.
But right now what's been happening is that the industry has been shifting to dirtier and dirtier, heavier, higher sulfur crude. Chevron, in fact, has been leading that shift in the Bay Area. Lately, they've been getting most of their crude from the Persian Gulf, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Saudi partition zone. But that crude has been getting higher and higher in sulfur. Chevron slate has been the highest in sulfur in the of any of the crude slates in the Bay Area.
And
so it's not surprising. That's the mix of the blend of crude oils that are actually refined, because they come from very many different places.
Okay. So they've been getting higher sulfur crude from the Middle East, but you said some tar sands oil is actually making its way to the Bay Area. We don't have a pipeline to Alberta, so how does it get here?
Well, by barge, by ship, by rail. Chevron has admitted on the record that they have refined some so-called unconventional oil at the Richmond refinery and intend to keep doing so. They don't say how much. The amounts are still small. That's true in general across the state. However, the floodgates are starting to open up by rail as communities, indigenous peoples, and activists are fighting the pipelines that are proposed, for example, from Alberta to the British Columbia coast, and they've been delayed, just as the Keystone pipeline has been delayed to the Gulf Coast. There is much more crude running by rail. That's been happening in the Midwest saturating parts of the Rocky Mountain State refineries, and it, along with some pipelines. And here, Valero, both in Northern and Southern California, has proposed projects right now that are proposing to bring in crude by rail. Valero says to the government agencies and the public, oh no, that's going to be the clean stuff from fracking the shale in Montana. They say to their investors, it's going to be tar sands. And tar sands is cheaper, so what do you think? 70,000 barrels per day for the Benicia refinery alone. The Rodeo refinery is proposing a project that could lock it into dirtier crude, which would become more and more tar sands crude over time as well. And essentially, the industry's, well, we should come back to this a little bit more, but the industry has to switch crude oils if it's going to stay in business at all. So the question is, what are they going to switch to?
Well, why do they have to switch?
California refineries, California is the major refining center on the western U.S. We're divided by the Rockies in terms of oil. So basically, the western part of the country, western part of the biggest refining country in the world, California is the refinery. And the industry here has traditionally been dependent upon two main sources for its crude oil, Alaska North Slope and California, mainly Central Valley. Both sources are in drastic terminal decline. In 10 to 20 years, won't be any more of them left. Probably more like 10 years by most estimates. So the industry knows this. They can't do anything about this. They have to find new crude supplies, and they have to retool. The different kinds of crude are so different that refineries are actually configured differently to run them efficiently. So they have to make investments now that will lock in either same quality, better quality, or worse quality oil for the long term. Those investments are being planned now. They're being proposed now in many cases. They're being fought too often only by the local community and groups like CBE, like my group, and not enough by the government. One of the things about the Chevron disaster that gives me some at least glimmer of hope is that for the first time, we have government agencies and the state of California starting to say, oh yeah, high sulfur crude, that can make the refinery blow up and kill people. That's the first time they've ever admitted that. That at least starts to put them on the spot to actually have to take action to stop it from getting worse.
But wouldn't the refiners say, look, we can deal with this. We just need thicker, less corrosion-susceptible pipes. There's a lot of retooling and improvements we need to make, but once we've done that, we can handle it just as safely as any other type of oil.
They do say that. In fact, there's maybe 1,000 miles of pipe in Chevron's refinery. About 1,000 different pieces of process equipment. Took them 10 years and blowing up the crude unit to actually start to listen to the workers about replacing 1 5-foot section of that pipe. So while it's possible that we could mitigate a lot of the dirtier oil we already have by completely rebuilding these refineries, that's going to be a multi-billion dollar fight in each refinery to really do it right. So it's not a small thing to ask for. And if you live on the fence line or work in the facility and your life's on the line every day, my advice is fight for that, because you're not going to get it if we don't all stand up together and fight for that kind of investment.
Greg Harris, take a minute to tell us where Chevron's at with its proposed expansion. The $2 billion project to retool the refinery, you've alleged all along this is specifically so they can handle tar sands type oil.
We allege that it was so they could handle denser, more contaminated, dirtier oil. Again, not necessarily tar sands. They might not call it tar sands. It might be just as bad. That's just a label that comes and goes when it comes to nailing the oil industry down. So we allege that oil they were going to enable dirtier oil with this project. They denied it. The court agreed with us. The appeals court agreed with us. Chevron's been under court order to redo its environmental review and tell the truth about it and analyze the impacts correctly. Since about April of 2010, we've been waiting for the environmental review that Chevron owes us by court order and owes the public by court order that actually tells us what they're going to do with the project, what its impacts would be. We're still waiting. Chevron appears to also be waiting in the wings. I would guess they're waiting for the right time to try to push their project through. They preliminarily, they've said they still want to go to 3% sulfur crude, which is twice as contaminated as the crude that blew that pipe out last year.
What do you think of the government response? They've just settled all of their criminal prosecution for $2 million in fines and restitution. They are still contesting another $1 million in citations from Cal OSHA.
The fines are a wrist slap. It's like a nickel parking ticket for this company compared to the profits that refinery makes every day. What's more important about the Attorney General's settlement, which was also the district attorney settlement, is that its probationary terms, which I have had a chance to look at, actually require Chevron to find and fix the existing corrosion in the refinery. That's important. That's crucially important. That's something that CBE and APEN, the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, have been fighting for. It was the urgent recommendation that the Chemical Safety Board made, the only urgent recommendation, was to basically make sure that, you know, remember, this was one pipe, one 5-foot section of 8-inch diameter pipe that ruptured from corrosion a year ago and caused all that damage. There are hundreds, by Cal OSHA's estimate, possibly thousands of other sections of pipe or pieces of process equipment that are corroded in that refinery. They need to be checked. They need to be replaced before any one of them blows up again. Next time we might not be in a situation where the wind is not blowing into the community or where the workers all can miraculously escape. People could die. And this refinery is a ticking time bomb right now. So finally having a legal settlement that puts Chevron on probation on criminal terms to actually find and fix the corrosion in the refinery, I'm hopeful that this might get them to do it, and it might save people's lives.
But you look at the actual amounts of the fines, and it's like a rounding error to the company the size of Chevron.
Right. That's right.
Is that a function of the law, or is that a function of the political will of the people that are prosecuting Chevron?
The fines are a joke. It's probably a function. They're a joke probably because of the law, and the law is the way it is probably because of the political will of the politicians. But what I'm saying about the settlement is that was announced by the AG and the DA yesterday is that it does more than just that wrist slap fine. If it was only that, it would be a joke. I would criticize it straight up. But it is a settlement of a criminal case that appears to put Chevron on criminal probation. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if the CEO could actually go to jail if he doesn't fix his rotten pipes. But if he wants to be that cheap, looks like he's taken that chance now.
Have you seen signs that the other refineries in the Bay Area have stepped up their vigilance when it comes to problems like the ones that caused the Chevron fire last year?
No, I haven't. And it's unfortunate that there's such a huge lack of transparency still, that essentially the government agencies are still helping the oil companies keep this kind of information from the public and from public interest scientists as well. That needs to change. But we work very closely with the Refinery Operators Union, the United Steelworkers, and we've been advocating together in Sacramento on various related issues, and also before the Air Quality Management District, where we have a joint proposal for how to deal with dirtier crude at oil refineries going forward.
You want the air
district? And the workers say, the workers union says that at some of the refineries, perhaps most of them, there's at least a conversation going on inside the gates. And at Chevron, for example, they're having a bit more open debate about, well, is this corroded pipe something we need to fix tomorrow, or can we keep running the unit and wait till the next scheduled turnaround? So I'm getting a sense that there's a bit of an improvement for now. That doesn't surprise me. It's human nature, and I've seen it for decades. The plant blows up, burns down, has a major spill, somebody gets hurt or dies maybe. There's a lot of attention to it for a while. Then it goes back to business as usual over time, and it happens all over again.
Meanwhile, you're trying to get the Air District to take up this proposal to regulate by the type of oil that refineries are handling. How's that going over?
Right. Well, it's still early. The good news is that the Regional Air Quality Management District has committed to try to become the first government agency anywhere to specifically address emissions from refining dirtier grades of crude oil. That there's no policy nationally, internationally, in any state, local area yet to do that. And it's probably the most important thing we could do for our climate. It's one of the most important things we could do for worker safety and community health. It, you know, the quality of the feedstock drives almost everything about the environmental impact in this industry. So it's amazing that it's been ignored for so long. So that's the good news. Also good news that the Refinery Workers Union and the community groups have a common specific proposal for how that requirement should be implemented. The question still remains, is it going to legalize it or is it going to restrict it? And that's a policy call that's going to be up to all of us in the months ahead as the Air District moves to final adoption of their rule, which they say they'll do next year. It's going to be important for all of us and for people everywhere to be making sure that they have our interests and not the oil industry's interests at heart.
You said the Bay Area's refineries have to retool to handle some type of oil if they want to stay in operation at all. Mm-hmm. If it's not the unconventional crude, if it's not the viscous, sulfur-ridden type of oil that's coming out of the tar sands, what would you rather see them handling?
Well, look, it's not like there's a clean type of oil. There's no clean crude. There's just a huge difference. The average quality of the crude oil refined on the whole East Coast of this country is better than the average quality refined in California by a long shot. In fact, California refineries right now, today, on average, are refining the heaviest, most inherently polluting crude oil of any region in the country, and I suspect the world. And so they say, well, it's running out. There's nothing else we could do. Nonsense. If we're going to protect our climate from extreme climate change, from climate change that society might not survive, according to the science, we're going to have to leave about half of that oil in the ground. So what we're saying is, why not use the least hazardous, least dirty half? And it makes a big difference, like 2 to 3 times less daily pollution and a lot less spills, fires, and explosions.
And paradoxically, California refines its fuel to cleaner standards than the rest of the country. That often means more pollution coming out at the refinery end because it's what's not going out the car's tailpipe.
Yes. In terms of the pollution pass-through, and we've seen this with sulfur in some cases, and certainly with pollutants like mercury and selenium, which polluted the bay from the refineries when they used dirtier crude 10 times more so. If the toxic element goes into the refinery and if it doesn't come out in the product, well, you know, it comes out another way in our air and our water in the local community. This isn't to say that clean fuel standards are bad. It's to say that we've reached the limits of what we can do with fossil fuel. It's time to start thinking seriously about a just transition for workers and communities. We should be, you know, what that settlement should have done with the $2 billion or $10 billion that it should have been instead of just $2 million risk slap is it should have put that money, first it should have got it from the company, and then it should have put that money into jobs for community members and workers, building the green economy, building alternative energy in our communities in Richmond.
Finally, I want to talk about the lawsuit that the civil suit that the city of Richmond filed on Friday. They're going to have the opportunity to go into discovery with Chevron. If this goes to court, that could bring a lot of information onto the public record that hasn't been there before. What questions are you hoping to get answered about how Richmond Chevron's been operating?
Oh, there's so many. I think it'd be interesting to know what the company's real policies were. You know, one randomly is of interest to the community and to people like me in the community who have to deal with the company every day and who were whistleblowers years ago about this corrosion problem. We now know from the Chemical Safety Board report that the question of whether or not they should stop denying their employees' requests to fix the corroded pipe went all the way up to the top levels of Chevron corporate management in San Ramon. We know that so far. What we don't know, and we haven't seen in writing, was what was their strategy? Did they say, well, we got to deal with this, and they just dropped, somebody just dropped the ball? Did they order the refinery management to deal with it, do the right thing? Or did they do something more like BP was caught doing in Texas City after 15 workers died, which was to say, well, it's going to be cheaper for us to avoid environmental regulations, so let's just not spend the money.